the Douglas Stank Podcast. All right, welcome to the Douglas Stank Podcast. My name is Nathan.
This is Henry.
We are the band Douglas Stank, and that's why we call it the Douglas Stank Podcast. Or give it any other ad about that topic?
No, I mean, I think that makes sense. It's self-evident that would be the name of the band, as the name of the podcast.
Yeah, we didn't want to start the Metallica podcast and talk as though we were the fly in the wall during the recording of Ride the Lightning or something.
Although you shared with me an interesting story earlier about the recording of the Metallica album.
Yeah. I wasn't there, though.
Well, yeah, I guess that would be kind of a weird podcast. I heard on from someone else.
Yeah, I heard on a different podcast. No. I saw online that a guy said something.
Yeah, those are the best.
That is a lot of podcasts, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, most of them, really. I think most.
Yeah, you
of
know,
space.
Nobody's actually created new podcast content in like 5 years. It's just people talking about other people's podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And then I love when they have a guest on, you know, from the other podcast.
Oh yeah.
You know, those are.
And then they review them talking about the other podcast and like, was I right when I said that you had said this on your podcast?
Yeah. Where did yeah, right. Exactly.
Where did you get that information? You'll be like, well, I got that from Gilbert Gottfried's podcast.
Yeah. Oh, hey, we have a lot of great stories from Gilbert Gottfried's podcast.
<That's all right.
laughs> We'll probably have to edit all those out if we start going.
Spats.
Oh, yeah. Spats. One word impressions. Oh, no. That was his Sean Connery. And then his Bogart also was like, all right, never mind. We'll tell that story at another time.
I'll tell you what's funny is the other day, I turned the channel on. I got the antenna. I watch the television shows that there's all kinds of channels that you get over your antenna these days that just play old movies, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not always good. That's the impression sometimes you get that, oh, man, I wish we were in the heyday of Hollywood where they only made good movies. But then you watch, like, these channels, they don't have all the good movies to show. They got to just show old movies, right? I'm not saying they're terrible necessarily, but... So I switched to a movie, because it says, like, a tugboat captain agrees to help smugglers, you know, whatever, Humphrey Bogart stars. And I'm like, oh, I think I've seen this movie. I switched to it. It's not the movie I was thinking of, because there are multiple movies where Humphrey Bogart plays a tugboat captain helping smugglers.
How often does that really come up?
Like, you know, because the weird part about this one particular movie was not only was it bringing back Humphrey Bogart to play his famous tugboat captain character, which is at least three movies if you include African Queen. I mean, that's not a tugboat, but it's a boat. I don't know if you've seen Academy Award winning movie African Queen.
Oh, who hasn't? Yeah,
okay, with Katharine Hepburn.
Now, are you going to count every movie he rides a boat in or drives a boat? Because he drives a boat also in Cape Fear, doesn't he?
That's not Humphrey Bogart.
That's not Humphrey Bogart driving the boat?
It's
in the original?
No, isn't it? It's Robert Mitchum who's in Cape Fear, isn't it?
Oh, wait a
minute. I didn't see the original Cape Fear, but Robert Mitchum's the bad guy in it.
No, but this
is... Robert De Niro plays in the second one.
Yeah, and Humphrey Bogart... No, not Cape Fear, not Cape Fear. Key Largo.
That's one of the ones I'm talking about.
Yes, Key Largo.
No. I'll tell you what's weirder is I thought it was going to be Key Largo that they were describing.
Yeah.
No. There's one that is not only his tugboat persona, it was also a movie that was exactly like Casablanca. Because he was a tugboat captain helping smugglers in like a French colony that had recently been taken over by Nazis. So the smugglers were smuggling like freedom fighters. It was like... because. Even back then, if you made a hit movie, they were just going to copy it again with the same people the next year to try to cash in. Like, this movie's within a year or so of Casablanca. They're like, ooh, we really like it when Humphrey Bogart is helping people against the Nazis. But we also like him as the tugboat captain. Can we combine those two?
Now, do we know, first of all, though, which one came first? And the other side of it is, do we know that Casablanca actually was a hit? In my mind, maybe it's urban legend, but in my mind, it was like not a box office.
I think the kind of movie you're thinking about that wasn't a hit is like It's a Wonderful Life,
yeah.
Which actually leads my next point about the movies back then is there's It's a Wonderful Life, right? Which was not a big hit at the time. Only became bigger when it got played on TV every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another movie called It's a Wonderful
World.
Like, It's a Wonderful Day.
World.
It's a Wonderful
World.
I'll fill it in later in post. Because guess who's the star of this film?
Who's that? Jimmy.
Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart is in both It's a Wonderful movies. And this other one is like, he's a... The description on like TiVo was like, he's a screwy detective hired to follow a millionaire. Like, the millionaire is this idiot. He's going to get married, except the marriage, the lady wants to marry him. It's just a sham. She wants to set him up for murder so she can take all his money and he goes to jail. Jimmy Stewart's got to prevent that. But it's like, oh, we're making another It's a Wonderful movie. It's in the It's a Wonderful verse. Let's get Jimmy Stewart over here.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because It's a Wonderful Thing. That's his thing. It's his bag.
By the time they hit the fifth one, though, they have to introduce Edward G. Robinson as his brother. You know? Like, yeah, I'm your long-lost brother, see?
Not so wonderful now, see?
But then he has a change of heart, and then he becomes good when he joins the crew.
In the Humphrey Bogart one, it had, I can't think of the actor's name, but he's the guy who plays King Tut in the Batman series. You know, the villain who's like Egyptian?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on the tip of my... It's not Frank Gorshin.
No, come on.
Riddler.
Clearly not Frank Gorshin. Anyways, we aren't here to talk about that gibberish. We've filled up enough time.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about the next song off our Social Distance EP. Jane Seymour has creepy, crepey cleavage.
On the face of it, that sounds like a controversial title.
I'll tell you what it is. It's a call to arms.
Ah, oh my goodness. Okay, tell me more.
Well, Jane Seymour has creepy, crepey cleavage. That is the name of the song. It's inspired. I don't know if everybody knows this. But she had an infomercial promoting a product. Jane Seymour, who where do you know her from?
Well, she's mostly known from Dr. Quinn and James Bond.
Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Hey, maybe our song is your biggest source because, right, that's what I mentioned
that
in
is,
the song.
It really is. Oh, and also The Heart's on Fire, isn't that? Or
right,
no.
So she was... So she was in a Bond movie as a Bond girl. Like, every Bond movie has a girl that... They usually have more than one, right? Mm-hmm. They'll have a girl that he paws and is killed by the villain. And then he'll have another girl that's like a sexy spy that he saves during the course of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sexist all the time. Because then the next movie, that girl that he saved and loved and they implied had sexual relations with is gone. And he's got a whole different set of women in the next movie.
That
so she
true.
Was one of these movies. I don't know what she did between that, but then the 90s. Because in the 90s, she was a star of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. A show I never watched. Did you ever watch it?
I didn't watch it, but I know it was saved by a writing campaign for its later seasons. I remember hearing about the campaign, that it was like one of those early shows from the 80s or 90s, from the 90s that was actually saved. It might have been even saved by an internet campaign. One of the first shows.
Really? The internet? The kind of people who watched Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman also had the internet at that time. Seems unlikely, really.
Yeah, you're right.
Because you normally think of like, the reason why it would get canceled is its fan base is like 50-year-old plus women. And I'm not with Hollywood on this. I think if you get a lot of viewers, what does it matter? You know, the Hollywood, they're always after the 18 to 35 demographic, right? the idea that somehow they're the only ones spending money, or maybe they think they're the only ones stupid enough to watch advertising. But to me, you know, if you get people watching, isn't that good? You just have different products advertised instead of advertising, you know, soft drinks. You're advertising Depends.
Yeah.
Or these days, reverse mortgages, prescription medicine. Yeah. Well, who cares? You know, if you get a lot of viewers, you get a lot of viewers, right?
That used to be Wilfred Brimley's world in the commercial world. Like, he'd have a drug, he'd have a diabetes product, he'd have an oatmeal, all that you would see commercials for during that commercial block for the older adult. You know, for the more mature.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, they should go ahead, have a show for older people, line up Werther's, Quaker Oats, diabetes.
Yeah, not diabetes, mortgages. But remember... Diabetes,
yeah. you know, prescription drugs for old people. Like,
there you go.
My favorite is I know someone I was watching TV with just the other day. She's young. She didn't understand. She's like, why are they telling us that these drugs like have all these horrible side effects? Why would anybody take them? I'm like, well, there's a rule. The FCC, if in a commercial for a prescription drug, you say what it's for, then you also have to say the side effects, as like to counteract, you don't want to get people excited about something and not. So you could have a drug ad where they don't tell you what it's for and then they don't say the side effects. But if you say what it's for, you say the side effects. My favorite is they have these drugs and they show like old people like having great times with their grandkids or whatever, because they're like drugs that are, they're only promising if you're already in advanced chemotherapy because you have cancer that'll kill you, it might extend your life by 4 months. Yay!
Maybe.
Yeah. It's not promising to do anything. It's not promising to save your life.
That's true. And admittedly, often one of the side effects is death. If you listen to...
Yeah, well, you're rolling the dice, right?
It may even include death.
The weirdest side effect I remember, there was this prescription drug ad where the celebrity spokesperson was Brooke Shields from Blue Lagoon in the 80s. This is much later. The drug promised that it would give you thicker eyelashes, which is odd. What kind of doctor are you going to for your eyelash thinness problem that you would then get the prescription? And one of the possible side effects was permanent eye color change. And like, who would risk having their eyes change color I want thicker eyelashes. All right. I'll admit I'm in a bit of privilege here. I have very thick eyelashes. So maybe I shouldn't be poo-pooing this idea.
That's
maybe I need to go out there for these people who have, you know, eyelash alopecia and see what they think.
Yeah, we've been blessed with our fair share of eyelashes. So we don't want to speak for those who... you know, struggle in that realm. I don't know. Maybe that's a conversation people have had with their doctor. How can I thicken out, you know, my eyelashes?
I would assume if I were an ordinary doctor and someone asked me that, I'd be like, are you crazy? What the heck are you talking about?
You really want a pill?
And you're like, nobody knows what your eyelashes look like except you. Yeah. Like, what are you even talking about? Is it one of those things where, like, some people are, they want to give themselves thick eyelashes with cosmetics, but they're sick of doing it every day? Like, you know how, like, sometimes they'll talk about people, like, tattooing their eye shade or something like that? You ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that one of those kind of things?
It must be, you know. Now, what happens when you stop taking it, too? Do they all fall out, like, automatically? I wonder if, like, you have sudden eyelash thinning.
Because my biggest eyelash problem is I have really long eyelashes and I also wear contact lenses, and then you get eyelashes in your eye and it's like hard to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And because of wearing contact lenses, my eyes don't water as easily. So it's used to having stuff in there. So like having a really long eyelash in there, it's a pain. It's a pain. All right.
That's true. So the grass is always greener.
But Jane Seymour, we bring this up because... she, besides her act, she has segued from an acting career into cashing in other ways. You brought up Hearts are open, right?
Oh, it is. It's something like that. It's not Hearts on Fire.
I think it's Open Hearts.
Open Hearts, yeah.
What is that?
Well, it's one of those TV brand name jewelers that often have national airtime. And isn't hers like, oh, you can get a heart that someone else also wears, or you can get multiple hearts?
I think it's just a design that she gives a slogan, keep your heart open and love will find a way. But it's just the stupid design that you might go to a particular jewelry store, like you said, a national chain, and be like, ooh, that looks nice because Jane Seymour said so.
Yeah.
Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, she wouldn't prescribe me something wrong.
No way. Oh, exactly. And the kind of heart it was, it's kind of like stretched. So I don't know. It looks like it's flattened.
Well, this song was inspired not because of that campaign, but because of another ad she did. A pretty awful infomercial. So I was in the middle of the night watching some television with a colleague. And she has a commercial for a product. I'll mention the product, even though this is kind of like counterproductive.
You'll have to bleep it out, right?
Well, whatever. The product is called Crepe Erase. That's the name of the product. The idea is it's going to get rid of your wrinkles, you know, that you think make you look awful or old or whatever. And the commercial was geared. It's one of those things where like, oh, well, in order to sell this product, we got to invent a need for it. We got to make people feel really bad about a flaw in their self. So this one is all about preying on aging people, aging women especially, that they have wrinkles that make them ugly. Here's a product to fix that problem. And then you'll be sexy like Jane Seymour, who's just spent the last 50 years of her life, you know, trying to look good. That's been her whole job. Everyone else has been like working, we're raising kids and living, but she's only been sitting in Hollywood trying to look good as her job. But somehow this product is a shortcut to like looking like her. And the tagline, the slogan that they kept saying was, it gets rid of your creepy, crepey cleavage. That's what they kept saying in the infomercial. Like the testimonial people would be saying, they'd be like, yeah, before I found this product, I had some wrinkles. You know, I used to have that creepy, crepey cleavage. But then I rubbed this on there and it disappeared. My cleavage looks 30 years younger. I don't know if that was literally what they said. But they kept saying creepy, crepey cleavage in different combinations. They'd say, you know how your cleavage can get kind of creepy, like almost crepey? Or be like, oh, you know how that crepey skin you get, almost creepy? Especially your cleavage. And they kept going on over and over again. And we were just like, what the heck is wrong with this commercial? We should write a song about this. That literally, we saw the commercial. It wasn't you and me.
No. I came in late in the game.
This should be a song. And I actually had to write this down so that when I woke up the next day, I didn't forget. And so you start off with a song. And all it says is Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage. Because that is what's unspoken. If she's really representing this product as being something awesome, it can only be because she has creepy, creepy cleavage.
That's true. Then she rubs it on and then it goes away. What is this fixation also with having to make these food? And why does it have to be crepes?
Well, no, you know, crepe paper.
Oh, like crepe.
That's what I think they really mean.
Okay, like that kind of crepey where it's like...
It's like wrinkly. Thin and wrinkly. That's interesting that maybe it would be like crepes.
Crepes. You slather a little strawberry on there, Loganberry.
This song is another one where we had recorded it previously to our career as artists on the internet when we were just coming up and bootlegging our stuff. So we had earlier version. We can play a clip.
Hey, this is from a rare bootleg. It's not available yet.
So we originally did an Audacity.
She had an
actually. It's just a little, you know, a little less powerful, a little more labored. So, for this release from the 2020 Social Distance, I figured I'll remix this song. I'll polish it up a little bit in Cakewalk, put it out there again. So that's the clips that we have today. Let's get into it. I think the first clip you wanted to hear from the new version. Let's hear what I did with the drums. That's what the new drum sound like.
Okay.
Did you remember? I'll tell you what the difference is, if you're wondering. Were you wondering about what the difference is?
I was wondering. I think I may have a clue about this.
What's that?
I'm thinking, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of them was made with Dr. Rhythm.
The original song that we played a clip from earlier, that was done with Dr. Rhythm, drum machine, definitely.
Yes, yeah.
I was probably, like I said, I didn't actually take the time to program Dr. Rhythm. I would just tap it out. And in this one, I replaced the drum track with the soft synth drums that we have. They sound really good. They're like sampled drums. They sound really good. What does it make you think when you hear the drum beat that's like that? Like what style of music or whatever? It's not really a rock thing, really.
So percussive. I mean, it's like almost like a marching.
Yeah, it's almost like a marching band.
Yeah.
I always think of when I hear it like this, and when I was making it, like a one man band. You know, the guy that's like going through the middle of like town square, and he's like wearing a bass drum, and he's got a snare on top of it that he works with his foot, and like a cymbal, and he's got like a flute contraption and a trumpet and everything, and he's doing it all by himself. And the song is a call to arms. And let me tell you something that I'll remember from my childhood. I'll never forget this. There used to be this commercial. I think it was for Pringles, which is a product I don't like. I don't like Pringles. But you tell me. Maybe this was a different product it was a commercial for. There's a commercial where... At the beginning of the commercial, they're in the town square, and there's a one guy with the bass drum, and he's beating it. Boom, 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 boom. And the entire time he's beating it, he's protesting, "No more wimpy chips! No more wimpy chips!" And that's how he starts out. And at the end of the commercial, the town square is filled with people chanting along with him, "No more wimpy chips! No more wimpy chips!" Because people have had it with... That's one of the things that the Pringles commercials are always like, "Oh, those other chips, they break and they cover your hands with grease, whereas our manufactured potato crisps stay shaped like a parabolic hyperboloid in the canister." That's the exact wording from their ads. But this song is a call to arms. I'm that guy. Instead of saying "no more wimpy chips," I've got that whole drum set on my back, hitting it like they're saying, "Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage." I'm just repeating it, trying to get the whole world in on this complaint about our celebrities trying to exploit us for more money by making us feel bad about the fact that we don't look like celebrities.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's a protest song.
Yeah.
There you go. As a one-man band, you're like the town crier out there.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. So you set the stage here pretty well.
Were there other elements of the music that you wanted to think about?
I mean, I really get that now. I mean, you can almost imagine a marching band also, like, playing.
Yeah, it is like because, you know, the marching band, you get a bunch of guys. They all have their own drums, so you can have all of them played at once. It's kind of like that sort of thing, yeah.
Oh, exactly. It has all of that.
Hey, Henry, Do you remember back when our favorite rock band put out a dance album?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Hey, who could forget? Yeah.
That was the time of my life. It was the swinging 2020s. Yeah,
exactly. The swinging 2020s.
Everything was right in the world.
They were playing hits at the club.
I'll tell you what brings me back. It's songs like The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night.
The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night. The Weeknd Starts on Thursday Night.
You remember, you can't lock down the beat.
I can't lock down the beat.
Who could forget that jam?
I remember.
But I'll tell you what gets my heart pumping is Sprinkle Some Diamonds. Such a classic.
I remember meeting my wife to that song.
Sometimes, though, you're in the mood for something a little more laid back, a little more classy, and that's when I always put on Douglas Stank's immortal version of Chopin's Prelude E Minor. But you can still dance to it.
That's right.
Who can forget their immortal hit, My Baby Has Poop-Stained Balls?
Oh, yeah. And I remember shaking it like an Etch-A-Sketch.
Oh, that dance sensation was everywhere. People dancing like they're turning the knobs, dancing like they're erasing their Etch-A-Sketches. Takes me back.
I was turning so many knobs back then. I was served with a cease and desist.
You know, I also like the classic sort of like album tracks that maybe they didn't get the radio airplay, but man, did I like the jam all night to Love Is an Open Sore.
Love is an open sore.
Oh, yeah. No, that's one earworm that festers like nothing else.
Yes, it festers.
It festers into your heart. Through your heart.
And of course, the collection wouldn't be complete without the Eurodance hit Love and Dancing.
Love.
That's true.
And dancing.
Nothing else going on in the early 2020s and but dancing. To jam in the clubs.
Love. And dancing.
Where can I find this collection Love. Of music, though?
If they were smart, they'd only release it in limited quantities as an NFT.
But they're not smart. It's available everywhere.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, no.
Coming soon on streaming service and downloaded, available everywhere. Douglas Stank, we would like you to
dance.
I heard that you could get your body sauce now, too.
That's right, Henry. The delicious dressing that Pizza Bob's has been serving all these years while keeping the recipe a top secret is now available in bottles for home use. Chipotle sauce, the delicious dressing that made Chipotle famous and kept people coming back to Pizza Bob's for decades, can now be yours at home. Put it on salads, use it as a dip, dress up those homemade burgers, or put it on whatever you like.
You know, now you can have Chipotle sauce shipped anywhere in your home in the continental United States.
Can't make it to Ann Arbor? You can have delicious Chipotle sauce shipped to your home anywhere in the United States. Save yourself a trip to Ann Arbor and call today, 734-665-4517. 734-665-4517. What's that number again? 734-665-4517.
But you had also, in the green room before we started, you had said something about exploring the bass line. So let me play a clip of the bass, and then we can talk about it. When you heard that bass, what did it make you think of? What magic happened in the studio?
That's a good question. What is the magic?
You should make sure you face your microphone.
Oh, okay. How about that? What was the magic?
So in the original recording, you came up with the bass line, you played the bass, and actually in that recording, that's there. You can hear, because when you recorded it, you were listening to the music at the same time, and you could hear it bleed. You could hear a little bit of the chorus. But in this remix, there is also a sauce synth bass added on, because a lot of the songs that we did in Audacity, when I bring them over, there's only so much you can fix with like equalization and compression and stuff.
Wow.
So I supplement that. So that's actually two bass lines playing along your original part. So your part's there, but then also a synth bass. So in a couple of the parts, you can tell it's actually two notes being played. They're not playing the same thing. Like, I think there's the part where it's boom, 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 where the other one's going boom, 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 like playing the lower. Like, they're going an octave apart on what the note is.
Yes.
So does that devastate you that I'm going back?
No, that is exciting.
And I am erasing you from the band?
No. That's exciting because you saved what you could and you had to supplement. No, that's not erasing. That's like patching it up.
Yeah, I know. I didn't actually erase it.
Yeah, it was still there. I heard it in the background there.
Yeah, because like erasing it would have gotten rid of the bleed, which you can't really hear that in the song when it's all together.
That's true. It's very faint.
But it if you could, that would be a problem because that's not the same vocal track that's played on the song, like the new version of the song. So it doesn't line up. But it's pretty quiet, that track, and then you don't really hear it because the song's kind of noisy. I mean, it is. Like a lot of the songs we did in Audacity, that's another thing that's difficult about remixing them. So a lot of the songs are really busy and noisy. You've got lots of tracks of instruments, and like it's really hard. That's why I haven't immediately gone back to like all our old songs and gotten them like remixed for Spotify release, because that would be really easy. We don't even have to work, you know, like, oh, we got all these songs. We could just jam them out there and load up Spotify with all kinds of songs people don't listen to. But no, you know, I want to take the time, and it's like difficult to work through these things.
Well, you know, see, I appreciate what you're doing. You know, it's studio wizardry that you can pull off. It's alchemy is what it is. That was not possible.
I think it's a credit that you played something so clearly and distinctly that it was easy to play it, to program something to go along with it. I didn't have to, you know, it didn't take a lot of guesswork to hear what you were playing. I mean, it's also about how well we recorded it.
That's true. Too. You know, we did spend some time figuring out where the mics needed
to go. That's what I'm saying.
Like,
Audacity wasn't terrible.
That's like, true.
When you record into it, it's not like Audacity automatically makes things worse because it's a lower prestige thing. Like, recording into it with the same microphones, like, the actual sound quality is not going to be different. It's about the reason that we went to a different free program, is because this Cakewalk has, you know, Cakewalk used to cost $100, and it's just because of a crazy Malaysian billionaire, it's free, and it does so many things, and we can do so much more. But
that is without a doubt the case in this song, and it's amazing that you were able to save what you were. Now, the Dr. Rhythm track was just not convertible then, I guess.
Think about it. What I'm saying is what I would just tap out the thing. So it's like not like everything's on beat. It's not. I could bring it over, but if I'm recording new things, it's so much easier to just program a new drum beat that is going to be on beat all the time and line up to like, oh, this is the, you know, 40th measure or whatever. And not have to worry about like lining things up. It's a credit, as far as I've gone back, to be able to find out on most of the tracks that we've remixed that I actually had notes about like what the tempo was, or like maybe it still had a click track muted in the original project so that you could see what the tempo was and where everything lined up, because. There's been some where I like maybe I haven't released yet, because that's actually a huge problem. Going back and trying to figure out what the tempo was and getting everything lined up, it could be hard.
You just wait though. I mean, those will be ones we can re-record for a special package.
Oh yeah, some of our old songs were like, if we want to release them, we're gonna have to re-record them.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's doable. We could do that.
No, because you know we were figuring out. How to use Audacity over a period of years. So just like the Cakewalk, it's been a couple of years now of working with Cakewalk, or maybe a year and a half, and there's been a learning curve either way. So anyways, just like in Audacity, it took, we learned and got better at it. Kind of like, I feel like kind of like maxed out how far you can get with that. Just like with Cakewalk, some of the first songs I did in that, it was like really with learning and figuring things out. And now we're getting better at it. And that makes it easier to get things done quickly and all this other stuff. Anyways. All right. So the next clip I want to play for you is this track. Let me just play it.
Goodness, I remember. I remember this. I okay. am pretty sure those are kazoos, right? Am I right?
No.
No, they're not
that
kazoos.
That is a clip that's actually the entire guitar bus. That's all guitars. That's multiple all tracks, but that's all guitars.
Now, wait a minute, though. Didn't we kazoo this one?
No. Because, first of all, I don't really know how to play the kazoo. As much as, like, sure, you just buzz into it. It does sound like a kazoo army.
Right? It is, yeah. But that's what it makes me think of, the kazoo army.
This is something that I did not change when I brought it into Cakewalk. Maybe I added some additional guitar tracks, because like some of that was clearly guitar. But the thing that sounded like kazoos, that was all recorded in Audacity. And I'll tell you what it is. To draw the curtain back, I wrote this song using a keyboard. We've discussed this before. I have a background as a playing piano. It's like my first instrument. And so I write songs better on a piano. And the chords I chose are much easier to play in piano. And then when I went to transpose and play them on a guitar, they're like, the chords are very difficult to make and have it sound like the way it was sounding on the piano. Like, I'm realizing that guitar players have a different idea of what chords are than what piano player does. But to make the chords sound like they do on a piano, it was very difficult, like, fingering. Like, weird gap. And so, at the time, rather than practice and get to where I could play the part on the guitar... And this is before we had Cakewalk, so I couldn't take shortcuts with like keyboards or MIDI, because that's not really part of what Audacity does. So instead, I record like of the chord that I had, three notes. Mm-hmm. I recorded each one, I recorded a take that was just a low note on the chord, another take that was the middle note on the chord, and then a third take that was the high note on the chord, because in piano terms, we think of a chord as three notes. We don't think of it as something using also like six strings or whatever. And somehow, in the effects that I had, and then putting them all together, it sounded like kazoos. And it was like a happy accident. Because like I said, if you're a guy who's a one-man band, beating that bass drum, hanging on your body, of course you'd be also playing the kazoo, singing Jane Seymour Has Creeper Caper Cleavage.
That's it. That is the truth. That's what you picture. You know, you see the guy with the one man band. He's got the kazoo, and then really you hear the sound.
Actually, reminds me of a story that the stupid story. This guy that like used to work with, who when he was in college, and he like went. He was the local arcade in Ann Arbor was Pinball Pete's. And he played like skee ball or something that gave you tickets. And the kazoo was like the lowest price item you could get. Probably cost like 10 tickets. Whenever he got the 10 tickets, he'd just go up and trade it in for a kazoo until he had like 15 kazoos. And the people would be like, no, we're not going to give you any more kazoos.
What the heck did he need all of those for?
I don't know.
Would he use them all at once too?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there you go. That's another way to do a kazoo army, but your way worked pretty well. You know what I noticed is it sounded a little bit like when you had an electric guitar that was all fuzzed out, but through MIDI, you were just playing a sample of earlier. Every time they hit chords, it did sound like that a little bit, that buzz, you know, that like multiple notes buzzing together like a kazoo.
It's weird. You said MIDI, but like there's no... That's all real. That's all real guitars.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah. For you, that was you actually playing the real guitar one note at a time, like you say, which is brilliant. I wonder how many times that's been done.
I don't know.
Like on releases.
It's born out of like some of those things where like kind of like the reason I've only become a mediocre drummer is like I just don't want to practice that hard. I mean, because the other thing is like maybe I just learn different ways to figure out these chords. Maybe I could pull out the information to tell you what the chords are. Maybe we could take emails or people could leave voice messages on the Anchor app. They could tell us how to make these chords better.
There you go. See, I think that's a possibility. You know, when I saw like you say, you know, the guitar players will think about the chords differently than the pianists do. That's the bottom line. But you know, those chords were pretty dang hard. They would have been hard for any guitarist to play unless there was like, you know, an Ace. Maybe Ace Frehley. Thinking about an Ace, but...
Hey, did you hear the news?
What news is that, Henry?
Pizza Bob's is moving 110 feet north to 800 South State.
Wow, all my favorites are 110 feet closer to campus. All the delicious pizza, milkshakes, oven-baked subs, calzones, and of course the world-famous chipotis that I love at 814 South State Street will be moving, but only 110 feet to 800 South State Street, the new home of Pizza Bob.
Yeah. So now you know where to go if you want to go to Pizza Bob's.
How exciting! All the great food of this Ann Arbor institution will now be on the corner of South State Street and Hill.
800 South State.
The new home of Pizza Bob's.
800 South State.
The new home of Pizza Bob's.
800 South State. Listen. Listen with your ears.
So it went from an F to an F / B flat to an F. To a C, a G / C.
But you know, we could have made your life easier and just played them in bar chords.
No, not doing that. No. The inverting, because that's the distinction. The slash chords are so simple to get to for on a piano. It's just so simple to
to go
the F to the F / B flat. That's just moving two of your fingers over, like up half a step. And it comes so easy. It's very simple. But like on the guitar, it's not easy.
Yeah, that's a stretching exercise.
It's like an awkward sort of fumbling, especially for someone like me who's not great at playing guitar.
Oh, yeah. For anybody who's just usually plays rock. Like I play rock usually and
That's
not hard rock and...
Like I taught myself how to play guitar. You buy the guitar magazines, and then you're only playing power chords, and you're learning some leads that you're playing. You don't even know you're playing pentatonic scales or whatever, but you're not playing any. You're not really. The thing is, I don't really care about learning the chords. I'll leave the chords and stuff up to you. That's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, that is. That is more, I hate to say it, but on the guitar at least. But your wheelhouse, of course, is the piano. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but it does that one for this might be the song where it's bitten me the most when it comes to like I wrote the song on the keyboard and I'm like, oh, I want to play this on guitar. And the transition's the most difficult because like there's a number of our songs, like one of our songs that'll hope to be releasing soon. My Baby Has Poop Stained Balls. That's another song where I wrote it on a keyboard playing a guitar. Took a little bit of practicing, but much more playable than this one. All right. The next clip, we have the vocal track. Let me play that.
Ah, la, la,
la la. La la la. La la. She was a medicine woman. She was a Bond girl too. She had an open heart, but now we know the truth. Jane Seymour has creepy baby cleavage. Jane Seymour has creepy baby cleavage.
That is Jane.
Seymour has creepy baby cleavage.
Nice. I love hearing the wall of Nathan's. It's like, you know, you think about the wall of sound.
Let's do like the curtain a little bit. Because, like I said, this is a guy, this is like a call to arms, somebody marching through the town square.
Yes.
Calling out something that's not right. Jane Seymour exploiting women for their ornament, for their insecurities to try to sell them a product. And so this guy's had enough of that. And so on the one hand, having multiple tracks like that is like there's more people joining in. This is an army of people. This isn't just one nut. It started as one nut. It's a movement. Mm-hmm. But also, this, whenever I sing a song, especially anything that's like something you want to shout out or sing loud or whatever, you know, some songs are loud, some are quieter or whatever. Difficulty is, it being not really been a trained singer or anything, is like, what do I pick? Do I sing it like at a lower octave? Because this is the other dumb part. Maybe I could figure this out someday and write notes, and write songs in keys that I'm more comfortable singing, and then transpose songs when I write the song and then it's in a key I have difficulty singing. I could just change it, make it easier. But no, I'm not smart enough. So very often, you get this thing, you're like, oh, do I sing it high or do I sing it low? What sounds better? What can I more easily do? Am I going to, if I sing it lower, is it going to be like I can't really get the lower notes very well and I'm going to be quiet? Or if I sing it higher, is it just going to sound whiny or like falsetto or something? But this one, boom, you don't have to choose. It's just both.
Yeah, well, and it does the job of really, the other thing it makes you think of is somebody with like a megaphone.
Yeah,
you know, they're in the town square with their megaphone rallying against the injustice. I mean, that's what you hear with the echo of the multiple names.
Oh, yeah. So this track was, all these tracks were recorded new with Cakewalk. It didn't use the original Gene Seymour from Audacity, I don't think. And yeah, the delay is fun, right? It's automated. That's that, because the way the delays worked, that's something you couldn't do in Audacity. You couldn't automate plugins. So with this, it's, you know, when you get to the chorus, you build up, you increase the level of the delay so that it like has a loop of effect. It's a fun effect to do.
Oh, it is. You hear that, and it does make a poignant point, I think, with the loud like cleavage that like echoes.
Cleavage. Well, actually, you know what I could do? I could just say cleavage, and then later in post, I'll put delay on.
Put in the echo. Yes, you can, because now you know how.
Yeah.
The wizardry.
It's one of those things that's made the Calm Down Catherine podcast a very popular podcast, is the production value that you get.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, I know that guy who produces it.
Hey, he does a good job. There was a great episode with the Taco Bell bell that I remember.
What's funny is recently I was, you know, it's weird because like some people, I don't know, everyone has a podcast. We were talking about everybody who has podcasts and they just, it's all like a very circular thing. But like too many of these people are like, oh, I don't listen to my own podcast, whatever. Like it makes them like, oh, I'm so humble. And like, yeah, I listen to my podcast over and over again. Partly because I create podcasts I want to listen to, and they're hilarious. But then also because how else are you going to know what needs to change and what needs to get better in the next time you do it? Like, what doesn't sound good, what sounds good, other than listening to it?
That is true. Right, but now I was in the old school, but not because I didn't want to hear it out of humility. I was afraid I would, like, start to, like, do a specific shtick or, like, do a bit. You know, I make it recur. I hear it over and over.
I get that. But truth be told, that's what you're doing when you do a show is the persona. You create a persona. Maybe you listen to it and understand, like, it didn't work that well doing it like that. I got a different... Because I'll tell you what, having done some podcasts, I will listen back and be like, I didn't really need to... I need to tone that down a little bit. You know? I need to tell... Maybe I won't be invited back to be a special guest on Calm Down Catherine if I keep up with that level of antagonism. You know, rein it in, bring it down a notch. Maybe like on like the pull back the curtain a little bit, first episode of this one, maybe I sound a little too antagonistic.
Well, but I don't know. You know, that's it's always weird the first episode, right?
We were both figuring it out. Because like, you know, some people are like, oh, I'm just going to keep it real and say, but no, it's not. That's silly. You're always, anytime you're talking and you know there's an audience especially, but anytime you're talking to anybody, you're adjusting for what you think your audience is. You're putting out a different persona. You listen back and you say, well, did I get across what I wanted to get across or whatever? All right. Maybe this is too high level.
I see. So what you're saying is we need to do the podcast in a sensory deprivation chamber to keep it real.
Yeah, to keep keeping it real, the way some people talk about this would be like, no, we're only going to record it on 8-track tape and then bury it in a cave. And then maybe someday someone will find it or something.
Oh, man. Like those artists, like the minute people like the music, like, oh, it's over. We're done.
Weren't you telling me the Wu-Tang like sold one copy of an album to a guy for like $1 million?
Yeah, exactly. Now, is that keeping it real? I mean, there was only one copy.
I like that they got money.
Right? And if that guy's willing to pay, it's worth whatever it's worth out there.
Because you were saying we should do an NFT.
Yeah, what did you think? I mean, maybe we should take a poll.
Non-fungible token, right?
Yeah, that's it. The NFT. It's all the rage with the kids. Did you see the Charlie Bit Me? That one became an NFT.
How? What's that even mean then?
They sold it for $700,000.
What's that even mean?
Somebody owns, no one else has the right to say they own the video. Not even the kids that were in it that are now in high school. Nobody else can say they own it.
That's silliness.
And technically, they were going to take it off, but I guess there was too much outcry, so the owner left it on. Like, but it would have been up to them. They could say, like, oh, this is coming off of YouTube. And then anytime anybody makes a reference to it, or like, then I guess that's your property. You know, you can cease and desist.
That one actually makes more. All right. I'm not a really heavy YouTube user. Like, there was a time not that long ago where, like, really, within like last 5 years, like, I really never went on YouTube. But like, I can't claim that anymore. Yeah, I've been on YouTube. Like, the longer you have a smartphone, the less you can avoid that sort of thing. You get on like Twitter, and like people are gonna point things, and you watch things. I'm not gonna say I don't use it, but like, when that was a big thing, that was only other people showing me on their phones or whatever. I wasn't like, so a lot of things have gone viral. That makes a little more sense than other things going NFT. Because that's actually, oh, that's a clip for some reason everyone wants to watch. Now somebody owns it. They could monetize it, I guess. Do you think it'd be funny if somebody bought it just to have it never played again.
Just to like pull it from everywhere.
I hate it.
Like no one can see this. You know, and then there are artists getting, like, Andy Warhol's estate. Is he dead? I think he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead a long time. Kill him.
Yeah, he's been dead a long time. But apparently he had some digital art at the beginning of digital heyday. It's probably crap, but they want to, like, take it to Christie's. Like, oh, we should sell this as an NFT.
Let's be honest. Most of his stuff is crap.
Yeah. Yeah. That is true. But it was exciting because it was no longer in the store window. Now it's in the art gallery.
In Men in Black 3, when they're like traveling in time, and the guy who's Andy Warhol is really just an undercover MIB agent who's like intentionally creating stupid things, and they're like, he thinks everyone's dumb for thinking it's great art.
That's probably not too far from the truth.
Because then, like, Will Smith's character, Agent J, is like, oh, it's so amazing. And you're like, what are you, a moron?
It's a soup can. Oh, man. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. We led straight. Oh, how about this, though? Think about this. This may blow your mind. If we're high, you know, we're thinking high level here. Let's say we have a song in an online store. Only one person ever buys it. Would that be an NFT one of one?
Well, I'll tell you what. Only one person has ever bought any of our songs for download. So did they get an NFT?
I would say that's an NFT. I mean, there's no special code, but as long as no one else buys one, that's an NFT. So, hey, get out there, everybody. Available Amazon Unlimited, the Apple Store, wherever you get your music.
Forget about Amazon Unlimited. Just buy the song. Download it.
You can get in low. 99 cents could get you an NFT. Amazon, one of one.
Apple Music, whatever.
But on the other hand, we have tons of streams. I mean, I don't want to get too into the how the sausage is made here for the audience.
Yeah, like the streams get us less than a penny. Selling a song could give us like 70 cents.
Yeah, that's true. So it's more than 70 times that, I guess.
Yeah.
But then it's an NFT. So then you have a whole other ballgame. You're buying low. Could we make up a code and just email someone a code and be like, that's your code? Don't share it.
All right. The other things we wanted to highlight, play a clip before we play the whole song, is that there's at the end of the song, this is something I've changed in the arrangement of the song from the original, is I think I added at the end of each chorus, I added an extra, but then also at the end of the main part of the song, I extended how long it repeats that. So I changed the arrangement. When you listen to the whole song, you can hear what I'm talking about. I like drop off the instruments one by one until it's just like the drum beat going as the guy's singing. Ah, you lose like the kazoo army, the bass, and then you get just drums. And then it goes into a coda. I love throwing on, this was something fun that we did when we originally wrote the song, kept it for this remix, is like reimagining the song in two ways. One, changing the kazoo army and the difficult chords that were played into just like a thrash power chord version of the song. So here is a clip of what the guitar sound like in this part of the song. All right. Would that have made the song more fun to have like that the whole time?
What was that?
Would that have made the song more fun to have it more like that the whole time?
Well, I don't know. See, that's a good...
I think it's a fun addition.
It's a fun difference, you know? The fact that there's a contrast makes it fun. But, I mean, the other side of it is everyone's heard a song even similar sounding to that song, like a Sex Pistol. Oh, can I say sex on our show? What's our rating? The Intercourse Pistols.
Oh, I don't know if you should say pistols.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that okay?
Well, what, with the school
the intercourse
and...
firearms. The small arms.
You think... I love the Sex Pistols, but I think of more like... With those guitars, I think more later punk, like... Sort of... Like, really meant it more as like sort of like body punk. Kind of later, what I love about the Sex Pistols is really they're underrated as being original and not like they weren't. In my mind, they were inventing punk, but because they were inventing it, they weren't. You know, they weren't necessarily thinking like, oh, you know, now in the late '90s, punk has to be like this or like that, right? This is more like what, like stagnant. Like hard punk kind of guitar sound, whatever, rather than like original, like, oh, what's punk? What are we doing here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it does have that. I don't know. Maybe it's because the way it was played. I don't know. Not the way, but the, you know, the equipment. Like, how did you play that through? Was that through
Wasn't that. I could go back and check, but I think that's really just the original recording had in Audacity. You with your guitar and your amplifier. I might have re-recorded it. So, but I think it was, I think it was fine. Like I said, the recording quality in Audacity is fine, really. If the tracks work, they work. I think that's your guitar, your amplifier. You got a tube amp that sounds. Do you want to plug what kind of amp you have?
Oh, heck yes. Oh, the Yamaha T. I think it's the T1000, just like the Terminator.
You want to hear something funny. I mentioned it's a tube amp, right?
Yeah.
Some people like to make fun or jab at sometimes because, like, he'll be into something and then he'll, like, act like he's the expert on that thing, right? Be like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And maybe that's a thing about old people in general or boomers or whatever. But he, like, went to Christmas concert or something a couple of times, right? And let's just say, like, ordinarily you wouldn't think of him as a fan because he, you know, like I said, he's a boomer. He's like, he loves the Beatles, he loves the Doors. And to me, you think, oh, the Strats, kind of like the rockabilly punk thing in the early 80s, and then he came back with, like, swing. And that's the thing. That's what's appealing is, like, he kind of, like, reinvented himself with, like, swing. And so now, oh, he puts to the Christmas show. It's, like, a big band plus guitar playing and all this other stuff. Comes back from the show, like, you know, he designs his own guitars. And he has his own company that makes amplifiers. He's the only guy that makes amplifiers with tubes. And, like, it's so preposterous. I'm not going to sit here and correct him. But, like,
oh my gosh.
Tubes only still exist, as far as I know, for guitar amplifiers.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Tons of companies make high-end amplifiers with tubes in them because of this idea that they're be preferred or they have a warmer sound, whatever people
it
say.
Is. It's the warmth and it takes it just, like, it almost compresses a little bit.
I'm not a guitar, like I said, the common theme, I come from playing piano. I'm not a whatever the word you might say, aficionado, snob, enough to care enough. I have a solid state amplifier, but most of the recording I do nowadays, I'm going direct in and using amp modeling software. But you have a tube amp, and when we've done live recording, it does sound better than my solid state amplifier. That is to say, my solid state's transistors, whereas yours is tubes.
Yeah, and I do think that's maybe the small difference, you know, in the amp.
So I let him say it every single time, but it's the most preposterous thing in the world. Every high-level guitar player has a contract with a guitar manufacturer where they design their own guitars.
Oh, and they sell them. And, not even high level. I mean, the guy from Rancid had his own guitar.
Oh, he's not high level. Shots fired.
Yeah, uh-oh. And the guitar wasn't any good.
Of course not.
Because it was the guy from Rancid.
It's funny you're starting beef with the guy from Operation Ivy. That's hilarious.
Oh, I know. That's like total anti-punk practice.
Nah, anti-ska.
Yeah, maybe anti-ska. Hey, come on. I don't want no war coming down tonight. Stop this war. Ain't nothing wrong with a Unity song.
I'm a though, so, like, I don't, but he repeats it over and over again. Because he, like, went to, I mean, a couple years in a row, he went to these shows, and I think he couldn't because of COVID this last year. But, like, he just goes on about it, and I, like, got to vent to other people. Like, every guitarist has these deals.
Yeah.
They're all designing guitars and amplifiers, and no, it's not the only person who makes tube amps.
But if he likes the Stones and Beatles.
But I said the Doors and the Beatles.
Oh, the Doors and the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
If he likes the Doors and the Beatles, well, the Beatles, at least, you know, there's still a couple that are around and active and have their own guitar. You know, that's.
He doesn't play guitars or anything. He just. I'll tell you what it was, probably. They probably gave you a program or something, and he probably read it in the program that he has his own whatever company. And I don't know how he jumped to him being the only one who had a company.
But admittedly, I mean, he's a great guitarist, and he probably has a very particular interest in the sound. He always plays those hollow bodies.
I'll tell you what, you know? Like, I'm not old enough to be, like, a fan of the whatever, because I was, like, 3 or 4 years old whenever they were hot and successful. But, like, there was a new, there was another set of bands that were doing rockabilly punk like in the 90s and stuff. I was into that. So oh, yeah. I do appreciate that he has like the arch top guitar.
Oh, that's
I always like that. It's a cool look.
Yeah, and not only that, you get good sustain and good feedback if you want feedback.
If I were going to study and get better at playing guitar, it would to be in the rockabilly style. I love Buddy Holly. In the late 90s, I love this band, Living End. This Australian band. They had, you know, a drummer, stand-up bass, and a guy with the arch-top guitar. And that was always a lot of fun. I saw them a number of times. If I had the patience to try to get better guitar, it would be in that style.
That makes sense. If I had patience and I'd get an upright bass too. I'd like to.
Oh, that would be crazy. Those are expensive though.
They are. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I need a kid here to take bass. That's what we need is a child in the family, you know.
You're going to buy a child an instrument that expensive that's three times their size?
No, but you could rent it too. You don't have to buy. No commitment. They just rent it. Yeah, I got to wait until at least they're in high school.
There was this guy that they're I worked too small. With. That I worked with him, but he had a degree from like a fancy music school, college of Berkeley in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Fancy music school. He'd always be like, he's bragged that like, you know, the guy from Living Color came and taught us.
Which one? The guitarist?
The guitarist.
Oh yeah. Well, he was great.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like
that was one of the things one of the little things he used to drop. But he amongst whatever he studied, he learned how to make cellos. He could play the cello, he played the bass, he played the cello, and he could make cellos. And he would make them and sell them. And so he was staying with this handicapped gentleman. And I don't want to say anything bad about the handicapped gentleman, but the reason he was handicapped is because when he was in high school, he got drunk at a party and jumped into a pool that only after he jumped in found out it was empty.
Oh, my gosh.
Paralyzed himself.
Ow, okay. That's
all right, so from like the waist down.
Yeah.
Paraplegic. So he was, because it was like a friend of a friend situation, he was living with this guy and like helping him whatever for lower rent or whatever. At the house, he had delivered, he was talking about it, this special wood that was recovered from like a sunken ship in like the Hudson Bay. The idea being the wood, if the wood's down there, it's been aging without being in the presence of oxygen, atmospheric oxygen, so that the wood gets aged without decaying. They pull it up and it's something that like, you know, you see, I've seen people make fancy things out of like distressed wood like that for like home decoration, but it's valued in making musical instruments. Huh. So he had special ordered this wood. He had it delivered. It was in the man's garage. He comes back one day and a workman had made a ramp out of it for the front door for this man in his wheelchair.
Oh my gosh.
He was so mad because like, sure, the guy could give him the money for it, but it's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
He was so mad and he did not appreciate what I said, my snappy one liner, best sounding ramp ever.
Oh man. Oh. Oh my gosh. Wow. That hurts. Oh, that I don't even know that, man, and that would hurt.
All right, so the other element of this coda was something you're very proud of.
Yes.
Which is, what is it?
Oh, well, this is, those of you who follow us closely may know, I don't contribute much in the way of vocals. And this may be the rare exception.
Right, so you brought up the punk element. Really what brings the punk element is, I was like, we need to have gang vocals. Shouted. We stood in your basement, the microphone kind of far, and we just shouted the whole verse and chorus of the song for this coda part together.
That's right. That was one of the. That was a great moment in recording history for us, I think. That was just a boisterous time, you know. The,
the The good old days?
The good old days.
If only we knew then what we know now.
Right, exactly. And how fame would affect us. Or not affect us.
All right, let's play the clip.
Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage. Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage. Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage.
All right, so proud moment. You, the voiceless member of the band, getting out there and also shouting out that Jane Seymour has creepy, creepy cleavage.
That's it. That was my statement. That's it. I'm done.
You don't need to do a mic drop. I think it would be fine if you sang more. It's like, I don't know if it's like you don't feel you have good enough voice, not confident enough, and I don't know if it's something like that. Because, like, just think, I'm not a great singer either.
Yeah.
You agreed a little too quick there.
No. What I'm agreeing with is that I'm not confident in it and would need to practice and all that. I did find a book years ago, like decades ago, Set Your Voice Free, and I never finished reading it. I never set my voice free.
So your voice is still caged up.
Yeah, and not only that, it was somebody who taught two people. One of them was the Hansons. Yeah, they had to learn how to sing. And apparently there was a blurb on the back cover, and I was thinking, like, even though I don't care for the Hansons
so
music,
like,
I was
the
like,
back of the book had testimonials. And
yeah,
one
it
of
was
them
a
was
testimonial.
Hanson, and the quote was, mbop.
Yeah, exactly, mbop. Now we can mbop on the microphone. We couldn't before, you know. Not that I was ever thinking I'd want to sound like Hanson or play music like Hanson or live like Hanson.
Did you know that Hanson has sprung up recently in the pop culture?
In what way? How?
They were on The Masked Singer as the Russian Dolls.
What?
This last season of The Masked Singer had like some wacky stuff happening. The first person voted off was the snail. And I know a very young person who immediately knew who it was that was the snail, even though it seemed preposterous. They open up the costume for the snail, and the snail was like 3 feet off the ground. You're like, what is this going on? And you're like, is this like a little person or what? You know who it was? Kermit the Frog.
Oh, you're kidding me.
They popped open the snail costume and a guy's hand with a puppet on it popped out. It's like whoever the new person doing Kermit is, because they replaced him again. Right?
That's right, yeah.
Jim Henson died. He was replaced with like Steve Whitmore.
Mm-hmm.
They recently, I don't know if he left the company or got fired. They recently replaced him with somebody else. Whoever the new person was, his first gig was being Kermit inside a snail costume.
Oh my god.
On The Masked Singer. And this young person I knew immediately was like, it's Kermit. Seemed quite preposterous until he pounced out.
Wow. Yeah, but the new Kermit is more bassy, isn't he? He's a little different.
I don't know. But then one of the other costumes was the Russian Doll. So they look like the Russian Dolls. And like every week, the Russian Doll would open up and be another one inside. And there'd be like multiple people singing. Usually there was somebody who was like a team in a previous season, like two people. But this was three Hanson. There's three people in Hanson, right?
I think, yeah.
Yeah. They were all in their own little costume, like Russian nesting doll thing, singing together.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, so they're still in, barely into the pop culture.
Defeated by Wiz Khalifa.
Okay. Well, I believe
who
that.
Who was champion. Wait. No. I don't remember.
Oh, you mean that? Oh, Wiz Khalifa.
Maybe he was third place.
He was third place on that? So anyways,
oh, yeah.
They didn't finish.
You know
in the top
who was
four.
First place?
Who's that?
Nick Lachey.
Oh.
Stay out of it, Nick Lachey.
Yeah, I know. That kind of ruins it for everyone.
Yeah.
Man.
You know who else was a kid? I mean, this isn't Masked Singer Talk podcast. That's a different podcast.
See, this is the content that people usually get. They get this kind of stuff. But who was it?
One of the contestants was Donnie Wahlberg.
Well, he had a singing career.
No. Yeah, he was a New Kids on the Block. But do you know who the judges are on Masked Singer? One of the judges is Jenny McCarthy. Who is Jenny McCarthy to Donnie Wahlberg?
Oh, you're kidding me.
It's his wife.
Yeah.
She did not get it right.
Wow.
There's some talk in my household that perhaps the judges are told who to guess and whatever, and it would be funnier if you didn't recognize your husband's voice singing.
Yeah, that's pretty unlikely. Now, do they they don't disguise the voice. That's the whole thing.
When they sing, it's not disguised. When they talk, they disguise it. Like, they talk and give clues or whatever. They disguise it.
Yeah, so anyways, so that was on the back of the book. There was someone else that was cooler. I don't remember who that was.
Cooler than Hansen?
Cooler than Hansen, but that's a pretty large pool.
Nelson, maybe?
I don't think it was Nelson. Wait a minute. Who was the Australian brothers? Oh, gosh. Not Jamiroquai.
I can't think of that many Australians.
Oh, they were like grungy.
Is Silverchair?
That's it. Yeah, right. Weren't they Australian? They might have been on the back of the book.
Yeah.
And again, not an appeal to me, but looking. Yeah, they couldn't even really sing.
It's one of those things where, like, the whole grunge thing was, what was silly about it was the record industry deciding, like, we'll just throw money at a lot of bands and call them grunge. And there's, like, no connection between them.
No, exactly.
Like, what does Nirvana have in common with Pearl Jam?
Yeah, and Alice
Chains? Like, Alice in Chains is, like, they're basically playing metal. I love Alice in Chains.
Yeah. Me too.
And, like, Nirvana's playing, like, I don't know what you call it. Like,
just post-punk? Like
punk, hardcore, they thought of themselves as, like, we're going to copy the Pixies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, alternative. But, like, Pearl Jam is, like, kind of standard rock.
It is, yeah.
I was never really that into them.
No, it's...
So then they get packaged as being alternative or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were different. Well, and Soundgarden was different than the other
ones. Yeah, of all those bands, Pearl Jam's a band I was really never into.
Yeah, they weren't...
I loved Alice in Chains and Soundgarden. Although, to be honest... I didn't buy any products from really any of those bands. That's what's funny. Like, at the time when they came out, I was young and I wasn't really buying that much music. Only later did I, like, buy one CD that was, like, Alice in Chains' Greatest Hits. A particular EP, or no, not EP, but, like, a particular B-side collection from Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've ever purchased anything from Soundgarden. I know I've never purchased anything from Pearl Jam. Because all those bands, I've heard them growing up so much on the radio, I don't need to pull it out myself.
Yeah, for those bands you mentioned, you know, those three bands, all their songs on their first album were on the radio pretty much.
Yeah.
Almost all. There was maybe one or two.
Oh, no, you know what? I have purchased two CDs by Nirvana, because at one point for $4, I bought the Nirvana Unplugged.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big hit.
That wasn't bad. That was a good selection of songs on
there. They do Meat Puppet songs and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, a Lead Belly song.
Yeah. And then, did they do David Bowie?
Yeah, Man Who Sold the World. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that wasn't a bad collection.
The original David Bowie song's pretty good, though. Anyways, do you think we'll ever be invited to play Unplugged? I'll tell you what, we're screwed. They ask us to play Unplugged. Because, like, it's funny. I think about this. Like, we did that one show, and it's been a while since we played any live shows. Like, I remember last one, like, we'd had a little bit of break because of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, practicing for like a couple of days just to make sure that like we could actually put together a set of songs, actually mm-hmm. play it. And it's like figuring out, you know, it's just two of us, you know, what are we going to have a laptop play some of the tracks? What are we going to do? Like, you were actually playing some of the songs where you were playing drums and bass at the same time.
That was fun. Yeah.
Imagine some of the songs we put out since then.
Oh no.
That's impossible. What if we were discovered? Like, let's say there actually was a record company out there interested in, like, music. And like, they were, like, it was one of those things from, like, the 50s or something where they're going to, like, throw a bunch of money at us and put us out there on tour. Like, we'd have to spend, like, a month, and then we'd have to hire better musicians.
Yeah, that's right. We'd be limited, like, to playing certain parts.
And we'd have to figure out, what are we going to play?
Yeah, there are a lot of bass lines we could play.
Because, like, first of all, a lot of the songs, it's like just the two of us, but we're, there's like so many different tracks. And then a lot of it's like, you know, programmed in and like, I don't know. Anyways,
we're going to have to go unplugged. That would be the challenge.
No, no, we couldn't. First, I don't want to go unplugged anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate acoustic things.
Wait, but you like the acoustic bass.
Oh, the stand-up bass?
Yeah, the stand-up bass.
Well, you mic that and then have that going through an amplifier.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you get that like thump, 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 thump sound that, like, that's fuzzy. You can't just have it like on the stage.
That would be fun.
I think, God, it's been like over 3 or 4 years since we've actually played, well, not 3 or 4, but maybe 2 years since we've played drums when we recorded something, right? Like actual warm.
No, you remember you did it for She Turned Left on a Meyer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then there are a few other tracks.
There's we're in the middle of recording something right now, and one of them I did some live drums on. Anyways, it's not about that. So let's play the clip of the song. Any thoughts on how well the song turned out in the remix? Jane Seymour as Creeper Caper Cleavage.
Well, you know, it did come out better, admittedly. You know, you just know how to, you're just so great at mixing down things. You're so great at balancing all the different sounds. And the additions you made really bolstered the song without removing much. And you were even able to save parts that I did, which I appreciate.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time as we talk another song. But here is the song. Jane Seymour has Creepy, Crepey Cleavage.